From Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live. My name is Carl. With me, we have Keon. Keon, how's it going?
Hello, it's going very well. The world is spinning. The sun is shining part of the day. The other part of the day, it's gone away somehow behind the flat earth to reemerge again.
The flat earth.
Or someone hit the switch. I don't know what the theory is, but
oh, everybody's coming
it
back.
Works some way or another, and I like it. I like being alive. How about you?
Doing good. It's been a busy week. Long, busy week. I went to San Antonio yesterday.
What's out there?
A lot of stuff's out there. It took us like 2 hours to drive to San Antonio.
Is San Antonio in the valley?
No, it's like an hour away. But for whatever reason, it took us 2 hours to get there, and then it took us like an hour to get back. So, yeah.
Is it like uphill? Why would it take 2 hours?
I don't know why it took 2 hours. Obi, why did it take us 2 hours yesterday? Why did it take us 2 hours to get to San Antonio? Traffic.
What other reason?
It was weird. We came back faster too. We came back under like an hour.
Yeah, Car was making it sound like time travels differently in each direction.
Obi, dude, me and Obi talked about so much stuff last year. Apparently, I know how septics work now. Oh. Obi explained the whole septic system to me. It's pretty wild, dude. What you can do with apparently like poop turns into methane, and then methane is a thing that you can use to turn on your stove. It's a whole thing.
There's a stacker who knows a lot about that kind of stuff.
Dude, I was like, really? I was like, can you smell the methane? He's like, yeah, you smell the methane, but you light it. That's how you go.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if you could use it as a fuel. If someone has like a septic system that is also like a fuel source, like in an emergency.
Yeah.
You can kind of turn it into power.
Yeah.
Anyway, weird thing to get a topic to discuss right at the beginning of the podcast.
You never seen this crazy show before. It's called Stacker News Live. Check it out. We're streaming live right now on YouTube. You hit refresh, and there we are, ready to explain all the latest and greatest here on Stacker.News. Check out some of the clips. Wumble has some really cool clips coming up. Last week, the most popular clip that we had was the whole Anthropic stuff. So we're going to talk about that more this week. And then we also post all the full-length episodes. So we're just don't want to watch the clips, you can watch the whole full-length episodes and listen to us talk about all sorts of things. But with all that, we're going to jump into what I like to call the top three stories of the week. Let me pull this up here. Boom. Number three, top story this week is the case for freezing quantum vulnerable coins. This is from Ben the Carmen. Bitcoin territory, 31 comments, 13,000 cents. Keon,
yeah,
what's going on here?
Yeah, for the folks that don't know, Ben the Carmen hosts BitDevs in Austin, has been the host for as long as I've been in Austin, since I guess 2020, 2021 or so. I guess during the last Austin BitDevs, which I'll get into that maybe another time, but during the last Austin BitDevs, they were discussing quantum and the trade-offs of freezing or not freezing quantum vulnerable coins. So for people who aren't familiar, people are predicting that eventually quantum computers will get advanced enough that they'll be able to break symmetric and asymmetric cryptography with quadratic speedups. And coins on, or Bitcoins that have their pub keys revealed will be breakable via Shor's algorithm using quantum computers. And that amounts to about 20% of Bitcoins in Bitcoin right now. So the question is like, if quantum computers eventually come, do we want to do something before they come and steal those coins? So that those 20% coins can be stolen by a quantum computer is the kind of scenario. And what should we do about it? Should we do something in advance? Should we freeze them, meaning they can't be spent, they're effectively lost? And then we'd introduce that freeze by giving people fair warning to move their coins somewhere else where they are quantum resistant. Or should we just let the quantum computer labs steal them? And so that's kind of the scenario. And Ben lays out the case for freezing them. And he categorizes the argument against freezing them as like, well, it's not really my problem if these quantum labs want to steal someone else's coin. My coins are fine. So they can just take those 20% of coins. And worst thing that happens is they sell them on the market. It's a one-time thing. Bitcoin is cheaper for a bit. I get to maybe acquire some of those stolen coins myself for at a discount. So what's the big deal? So Ben argues the other side, which is that we should freeze those coins. And he does it mostly by saying that reorg incentives change in Bitcoin when 20% of the supply is vulnerable like this. And he describes a scenario such that these quantum computer labs will partner with miners to steal these coins because there might be many competing quantum computing labs. And so they want to make sure that their stolen coins get mined before another quantum computer's lab's coins get mined.
I think Topher has something he wants to say. He like came over here right away. It was like,
so then they partner with miners. Then they attempt a 51% attack the network, and or don't 51% attack it, and then instead there's a chain split. Where each is trying to basically own the chain tip, where they have possession of this 20% of Bitcoin supply or Bitcoins that are vulnerable to quantum computers. And that's his main argument, is that with the introduction of quantum computers that can spend these coins, mining incentives change, and they change in a way that kind of destroys or
Topher
incentivizes a 51% attack.
Just talk.
He has a comment.
I know he has it in.
No, he has a comment in the thread. If you're.
Oh, who? Topher does? Okay. Where is it at?
Aren't you? One. You have a NIM. No, I think you've disclosed the NIM before.
Oh, CMD, that one. That one, CMD.
Yeah, that's you, right? Or
you
someone
said I highly
like
doubted
you.
Fighting yes. over the. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Can you give him the mic? Yeah. Sorry.
There you go. I want you to. I mean, he's just. I mean, Ben is just trying to steel man some argument. So it's not like he's married to this argument. He's trying to steel man something. But yeah, I guess the idea is.
Topher. I knew you had something.
I think it's highly unlikely that this is how things play out. But
yeah,
it's worth considering.
Keon, was there anything else in here that you wanted to bring up?
I think there was a lot of people chime in. Jimmy, I think, has one of the better comments, I think on the other side of this, where he's not steel manning, but again, arguing for the side where we kind of let nothing or do nothing. And his main argument is that he thinks, what did he say? A few things he notes is that it's hard to predict when this will happen, when the quantum computing stuff will happen, and we might have decentralized mining pools by then, in which case there is no mining pool for a quantum computing lab to partner with. I think the other thing he says is that, what did he say? Three possible chains wipe each other out. That's right. He argues that miners have an incentive to cooperate, actually, because if you think about it in more steps than just there's a bunch of money on the table, the first person there to steal it gets it. Miners would have to be concerned about the long-term health of Bitcoin, because they intend, if they want to actually sell those coins that they've just stolen, they need Bitcoin to be worth something. And if their attack makes it worthless, then there's not much incentive to actually attack.
It's a Pyrrhic victory.
Yes. A what victory?
It's a Pyrrhic.
A Pyrrhic? I haven't heard that. Okay.
I might be pronouncing it wrong.
I haven't heard that before. Pyrrhic victory. So I thought that was pretty good. I think that is pretty reasonable. I haven't thought about this too much. I do think there is, we had a quantum computer theorist on Stacker News for an AMA. And one thing that I think I'm learning from, I learned from them, and I think from just some of the discourse that's going on in quantum computing, is that I think people are projecting the kind of breakout of LLMs onto all emerging technologies. Because we had this ChatGPT moment a few years ago, and now we're like, what other technologies are just waiting for this moment to happen where things really change dramatically overnight? And I think we're beginning to view quantum computing that way, when it might not, I'm not sure if the timing is there. I think that is how like scientific revolutions happen, but it feels pretty instantaneous. But
is there anything else that you see here that you wanted to bring up? Topher, you have any other thoughts besides what? Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
So Satoshi's coins aren't like one giant pile of coins and an address. It's much smaller amounts that are spread out across thousands of addresses. So you wouldn't just crack one address and then now you have all of Satoshi's coins. Like, you would have to continuously crack each and every address. So it's like, this would only come into play if quantum computing was, or the ability to crack ECDSA was so fast that you could just crack a whole bunch of Satoshi's addresses in bulk. And then multiple people would be able to do it. And then you had multiple people fighting over all of that money. But I think if ECDSA is ever broken, it's more likely that it's going to take a lot of resources to break just one key. And so it's going to be like a slow drip of coins being stolen, and not just like, oh, now there's this massive pile of coins up for grabs. So that's another thing. It's not going to be that simple to just grab a whole bunch of coins.
Just one note on that. I know that most of the quantum computing algorithm speed up of breaking something like with Shor's is it's quadratic, which is pretty fast, and fast relative to what it would be to break otherwise. So I think that is fast. I think they would be probably breaking multiple at a time. I think assuming the quantum computer is actually stable. And
yeah, it has to be stable, and they have to have enough qubits.
Yeah, they'd have to have enough qubits, but between breaking keys, do they have to reset the whole thing? Do they need to bring in a bunch of, I don't know, liquid nitrogen or whatever they're using to like cool it? Like, how stable is a quantum computer when this happens, we don't really know. So it might just very well be, yeah, someone does it. This is like an experiment or a one-off kind of thing that they do to break.
Well, that was a very interesting post. Thank you to Ben Carman for sharing his thoughts. We'll see you Monday night, Ben, at Beefsteak. The next number two top story this week is Auction Bitcoin Art Magazine Patrons Edition Collector Set 321. This is from Asanaho. Asanaha? Asanaha. Sorry.
Asanoa. 31K sets. I think they've come by PubLab, actually. In
sorry
Austin
about
before.
That. It's been a long week. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, I believe they're the founder and like runner of Bitcoin Art Magazine. They dropped a collector's edition. They call it a patron's edition, but it's a set of 21 limited editions of their, I think, the first issue of Bitcoin Art Magazine. It's bound in fabric, and it's like gold embossed, and it has, I think, maybe the pages are a better quality, although my understanding of Bitcoin Art Magazine is it has really high page and print quality already. So that's auctioning right now. It's like under $100 or...
Oh, I recognize this art. This is the one...
Yeah, it's a dude who's come through PubLab
before.
Yeah,
he's given us a ton of art.
Yeah, he's given us stickers and stuff.
Oh, wow. Hey, it's good hearing from you.
I guess the Genesis edition of the Bitcoin Art Magazine, which is this, is like the special version of... It has 150 pages and 60 pages of full art. I think the special edition, patrons edition, also includes a few like prints, Glycy prints of... I think a fractal Egypt and a few other pieces of work.
And it makes me want to support him too. Cause like, yeah, he gave us so much art. I want to say like a few years ago.
Yep.
And
back on Sixth Street.
Yeah. Yeah. So highly recommend this, Stackers. I've seen some versions of these here. It's just gorgeous. Like the type of paper, everything. We even got them framed, or maybe he must've framed them. I forget how that all got taken care of, but I highly recommend it. So is he auctioning off just this, or is he just, okay. So it looks like he's selling 3 of 21. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So it's just that one for auction. He also on the same day put up, three other posts.
Oh, okay.
That I wanted to make sure we cover.
Well, I'll definitely bid tonight. How do we sign it? We just sign in via... we can sign in via all that stuff. Okay, cool. I'll make a bid tonight, brother. I appreciate you.
I wanted to cover briefly the other posts that he shared. Two of them were podcasts. One of them was their own podcast. So they have a Bitcoin Art podcast.
Cool.
Where he had on the Bitcoin roller coaster guy.
Oh, you're on your screen.
All right, oh, sure. Yeah, this
that
is
right there?
Yeah, this is the podcast. He had the Bitcoin roller coaster guy. You can see it in the background here. It's the famous Bitcoin meme that we've all seen a million times by now. He also shared, I think, an episode of The Movement of Art. He was on an episode of that, and they shared that episode. I haven't listened to either of those, but they sound pretty awesome. And then the last thing that they shared was... an auction for silk mandalas, which are these blotter art prints. I guess back in the Silk Road days, people made LSD, sheets of LSD paper, these little kind of like breakaway pieces of doses of LSD, usually presented in a sheet. And they had printed on them Silk Road iconography. And Asanoa recreated them or was inspired by them and made a fresh set. Obviously, there's no LSD in them, but they're printed on LSD blotter paper.
Wow.
And
that's cool.
Framed and matted in like this. It's about 4 inches by 4 inches.
Wow.
So probably not very big, but
that's interesting.
Yeah, currently up for auction as well.
That looks dope.
Yeah, it looks like people are gonna get this to load.
I actually prefer that one, to be honest.
Well, the magazine has the auction for the magazine didn't show all the like awesome art. Like he has 60 full page.
Are these gonna be at the conference? Are they going to the conference? Is this what
This will be at Bitcoin Met. These will probably be on display on the there.
Conference. Okay, cool.
Yeah, this is already the minimum bid on this is already over $1,000.
Wow.
And I guess there's only 21 of those as well. But I just wanted to cover all the posts that they shared. And if you're gonna be at Bitcoin Magazine conference in Las Vegas, check them out and maybe make a bid.
Awesome. Let's jump into the number one top story this week. It's going to be van delivery to, what does that say right there? Kramatorsk, Ukraine, paid with Bitcoin donations. This is from Peter Todd. 73 comments, 176K sats. Keon, that's a lot of sats.
That is a lot of sats. I don't someone really wanted to make sure that Peter Todd got rewarded for doing this. Or I think he said that he was going to donate towards his next vehicle using the proceeds of the post.
So anyway, what is this right here?
I believe it's just a shot of a picture of a building that Peter Todd took. To describe what Peter Todd discusses here is his trip from Kyiv to near the front lines in the Ukraine-Russia war. For a while now, Peter Todd has been in Ukraine and helping them secure supplies. And I think one of the things he's particularly set on is supplying vehicles. And so I guess in a previous trip, he had supplied a truck. And in this case, he supplied this van. And that's a picture of him on his way to deliver the van. They filled it up with supplies in the capital of Ukraine. And now this is a picture of them driving it to the front lines where he delivers it. Let's see what else. Oh, the video here is him on a highway driving to the front lines, and you can it's dark, but you can see the drone netting.
Oh, right there.
Yeah, because a lot of the warfare fought in Ukraine right now is with drones, or I guess modern warfare in general is fought with drones, and you kind of want to protect these critical roadways with this is how you like protect them, because a drone runs into the net, it'll explode if it has a warhead on it or whatever.
Interesting.
So they have for these critical roadways, they protect them with these nets like this, I guess. What else did he cover in here? I guess he ended up near the front lines. He doesn't disclose where for security reasons or to help them or whatever. But he ended up near the front lines around Easter or Orthodox Easter. And he says that there wasn't a ceasefire like was reported, because he even witnessed drones himself that were having to be shot down near the front lines. This is an interview with him, an American volunteer in Ukraine. Peter Todd gave the group that the volunteer is associated with this truck that's behind them that was nearly taken out by a drone. It has been damaged by a drone due to shrapnel. That hand movement is the drone kind of bumped into and slid off of the truck, and it has like light damage that makes it inoperable for now, I guess. The rest of the video, there's another vehicle that they have that also got hit by a drone. So that's why Peter Todd is set on helping them get vehicles, is because they otherwise are traveling on foot, having to carry supplies to and from supply centers and the front lines, and they get the any equipment, but also vehicles, gets destroyed by drones usually. And so they kind of need to replenish those regularly. And it described was generators. So because they're using drone warfare, they need to charge the batteries on them. They need power on the front lines. And so they're usually using these very large generators. But when those generators get destroyed by a drone, they have trouble replacing them because they're really large. You have to like have human beings do it. So I guess Peter Todd helped them develop or help them switch to a model where they buy really small generators that are about 10 kilograms in size that can be flown to the front lines on a drone. And then rather than using one big generator, they can use many small generators that are drone wide enough to be taken on a drone. Anyway,
What's this down here?
A video of a Russian oil refinery that I think was attacked by Ukrainians. And probably with drones too, and is set ablaze. I don't follow much war content at all, but that is my understanding of that's what he describes as happening. It's like that's like a win for their side of the war. Yeah, I guess he's taking more donations to buy more vehicles like this and supply more vehicles. What I really respect about this is Peter Todd is actually there, and he's not just like talking on Twitter about wars, like and social media, like wars about wars. So, pretty cool.
Yeah, we had the top comment from Blockchain Boog said, "Wow, this takes balls with so many CKS, including myself, because of all American men are CKED." And keyboard warriors these days, it's crazy to see a man stand up for what he believes in and take action. And then Sudanica said, not supporting genocidal senseless conflict isn't C-U-C-K-E-D. Interesting.
Yeah,
stuff.
People have a lot of feelings about war.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, people have a lot of feelings about war, obviously. And so it's not like there's going to be a lot of conflict around it. You know, and he's using Bitcoin to do it. I guess that's the relevant part, is he's using Bitcoin to take these donations, because passing all of this money through a bank probably does not make much sense.
Right. Yeah, it's a really interesting investigative piece here on Stacker News. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this before on Stacker News. This type of stuff you see like on editorial, big magazines. So.
Yeah, very, very cool, very fun. Well, not fun because it's about war, but interesting post.
Cool. Thanks, Peter. We're going to jump into the top. Well, no, that's actually all of it. That's all the top three stories this week here on Stacker News Live. We're going to jump into Wumble's picks. This is Wumble's segment. Wumble is behind the scenes making clips every day. Check them out here on Stacker News Live on the YouTube channel. You can see it's right over here. These are his clips. These are Wumble's clips. So check it out. His story today is Apple names John Ternus CEO replacing Tim Cook, who becomes chairman. Keon, did you hear about this news?
I did hear about it. Yeah. So I guess Tim Cook is stepping down away from CEO. I think it's effective later in the fall of this year, September 1st of this year, that'll happen. And who he's getting replaced by is John Ternus, who was a senior vice president of hardware engineering and I think he's been at Apple since 2001. Originally working, I think, on some of their display, their like Apple displays, and then kind of went up the ranks to senior vice president, and has now been picked. I guess he was also the youngest member of their executive team. So among all the VPs and kind of other people in the C-suite, he was the youngest of them. And
I think everybody thought it was going to be Federighi, right? Or like one of these other guys that was in charge of like software. But do you think there was this is more a question for me to ask you. Do you think there was another like behind the scenes really bigger issue that was going on why Tim Cook stepped down?
Well, Tim Cook is quite old. I guess he's like pushing on 60 at this point. He was already significantly older, I think, than Jobs when Jobs died. So I guess that might be one thing, is he's just, you know, he's kind of slowing down. Another, I think, is probably the emphasis on hardware is as part of Apple's business is probably greater than ever. I think most of the services they tend to produce are, you know, at parity maybe with competitors, but they're not really pushing boundaries there, but they're definitely pushing boundaries in hardware, and that's kind of what they're known for. And we know a bunch of AI plebs who are really into their hardware for AI stuff. And so I'd guess that's why I think they're just like doubling down on the hardware direction.
Do you also think this is a good time for them to make the move or no?
Yeah, why not? When else? I don't know. I don't know much. I don't follow Apple much, except I pay attention to their product announcements because I tend to like most of their products. But it does seem if they are going to go harder on like providing computers for people building stuff with AI or running local models and stuff, it would make sense to me. I think it just makes sense in general to have someone who is very hardware focused. I mean, it seems like the leaning of Steve Jobs, even though was more general, more hardware focused than software focused.
Yeah, Wumble's question was, here he goes here. He said, question, in your opinion, what has been the best and worst thing that Apple has done under Tim Cook's tenure from 2011 to 2026? Keon, what do you think? What do you think it's been?
I don't really know all that. I don't follow Apple much. I vaguely know the product announcements, and I would say my favorite product that has emerged over the last decade or so is probably the AirPods. I think it's kind of boring, but I think at least when it came out, I know there's a lot of competition now, but at least when it came out, I thought it was pretty like way ahead of the crowd. And worked really awesomely and felt very magical. And then probably my least favorite product that I never really understood is probably the Apple Watch. I don't get it. I don't think it looks nice. I don't think it. It just feels like a phone on your wrist. You and I discussed this like a week or two ago.
Yep.
I
think.
Do not like
it. I don't know. I feel like Wumble said, what in your opinion has been the best and worst thing? The best thing, I would say just probably the hardware, right? Probably the hardware. He just keeps improving it with his team. I would say that's probably the best thing is the hardware hasn't stopped as far as like, just upgrading every year, the iteration.
Yeah, he kept the wheels on the car, which is probably a big deal.
I think I would say there's two best things. So that's the first one. Then the second one is that, like, Apple didn't implode after you left. Like, there was a chance where he could have because they had gotten rid of Forestall in the beginning and there's all that Maps debacle. So it could have barely happened. It could have happened early on within the first 2-3 years, but it didn't. And so he kept his promise to Steve Jobs. And then I would say he's definitely made it stable enough to where now somebody like Turner's can come in and potentially really start innovating. So he's built enough like solidifying capital behind the scenes. And so I think they're going to be fine. The worst thing that he's done, I think the innovation stuff, I think, is just like very lacking these days. They just haven't really innovated. I think the Vision, what is it called? The Vision goggles?
Or Vision Pro.
Yeah, that's just a miss. And then they pulled back from Titan too as well. So
what is Titan?
Titan was their car that they were going to make.
Oh, I see.
So that was another. So probably those two things stand out. But even with that, I think he's still phenomenal. I mean,
yeah. As far as I know, the VR headset was pretty good. Like as far as a high-end VR headset, it was very nice. I know most people who are into VR view it that way. But yeah, I don't think the market was there for it.
Well, typically they enter markets and then they dominate them or they improve upon them. And I don't know if they actually dominated with their Vision Pro or improved on it. So that's the biggest thing I've seen. At least with the smartwatch stuff, they at least improved upon the Pebble and then like dominated it. Same thing with the AirPods.
I think it was, they dominated with the watch though, I think because of its relationship to all like the ecosystem of other Apple products. Like if it were just a watch on its own, I'm not sure it would have been as successful.
No, because remember Tether was doing Pebble was doing their tethered phone, iPhone that you could attach. And then Apple came out with their watch that was also tethered to the phone. So it was a way bigger, I think it was way bigger than the previous stuff that was out there, but I don't know.
Yeah, I just wonder what the reason was for that. Is it their existing market share around Apple products, and they can make the watch work seamlessly with it in a way that Pebble could not?
I have a question for you. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think he's going to get replaced right away, or do you think he's going to make it Keon?
From what I can tell, Apple is a fairly steady ship.
Yeah.
And they have like a bunch of structures in it that kind of prevent it from capsizing.
Yeah.
And they have a bunch of money to like keep people in line and cooperative. So I don't see much changing, and I would guess they thought a lot about it, and I don't have any insight.
I hope he comes out of the gate just swinging with like a new product. I hope that happens.
Skateboard, Apple skateboard. That's what I vote for.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyways, that's Wumble's Picks. Every week we cover Wumble's Picks. Tune in next week for Wumble's Picks. We're going to jump into AI stuff. So this week, Uncle Jim, did you check out this, Keon?
I saw it, yes.
So Jim released Jamie Poole. He goes into it here. He says it's a natural language agent endpoint that handles orchestration for you. You find authoritative sources on Bolt 12 and Blinded Pass. You get back structured JSON with exact clips, timestamps, transcripts from millions of podcasts, moments for 140 sats per call. And you can click out the playlist link here. Let's see. Searching moments from thousands of podcasts. Yeah, there you go. So if you want to type in Car and Keon, you can type in Car and Keon, talk about, I don't know, AI. Searching for moments from thousands of conversations. Let's see if it comes up. Yeah. Let's see. Bum-bum-bum-bum-bum.
Live product.
Oh, wow.
Here we go.
Wow, so he has like multiple areas where we talk about AI. That's awesome. So there you go, Stackers. Check it out. He's wanting feedback, so drop it in the comments. And check out the open API spec that he's built here under the .txt. So most of these new startups have .txt files and .md files on their domain. Pretty cool stuff. Keon, you got any thoughts on this?
I think it's cool, yeah. So he's taken his searchable podcast archive that has like this intelligent clipping and transcription and put an L402 endpoint in front of it, which allows programmatic payable API access. And so now agents can access it and get access to these clips and include that in the research, audio in the research, which they might not have been able to before. And so I think that's pretty dope, cool.
I think we could probably use it for clips, or maybe get Wumble to, because you have an SNL account, right? So we can get Wumble maybe to check this out. Wumble, let me know if you're interested in doing this stuff. We're going to jump into the next story that we have. So introducing GPT 5.4. Keon, did you check out the new ChatGPT or GPT?
Oh, did I check out 5.5?
5.5,
yeah. Yeah, I've been using it since it was released, and it seems better. Which is cool. I haven't done anything. The stuff I'm working on right now is a class of problems that I don't find LLMs are very good at, including 5.5. So I haven't been able to experience the power of it. Like what I would want ideally is to compare it to like previous work that I've done, like something similar, and use an LLM for it. But I haven't done that yet, but I would guess much better.
Dude, it's interesting because like I just barely moved over to 5.4 like a week or two ago, and it's a considerable upgrade. And I haven't played with 5.5, but I'm kind of in the thing where I'm just like, I don't know if I need that much anymore. Do you know what I mean? I feel like 5.3 for me was the.
We all need more IQ, bro.
I feel like 5.3 was that thing for me where I was like, just for my job, that was enough. And then I went up to 5.4 because I felt like they were kind of throttling 5.3. And then now it's 5.5. So I'll probably take a week before I'll get moving. I can't use all my tokens.
Oh, yeah. It does burn more tokens to be on the latest models. That's right.
I'm good with 5.4, man. I can't really tell the difference. Or, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. But I have had 5.5 do some images stuff just for like diagrams and stuff for decks. And that has definitely helped out a lot.
Right. They released their new image 2.0 or whatever a few days before this.
Yep. But yeah, this was the most interesting one. They go into a lot of details here as far as like the benchmarks and the capabilities of the different models and then what you can expect. But yeah, I just saw they released it on Cursor today too.
They did.
I just saw the pop up.
Yeah, I was worried that they were getting into like a fight of some kind, and yeah. OpenAI was going to starve them.
Oh, because of the whole Grok thing or something.
Yeah, because they're like, all right, you're working with our rival who's suing us. we're not going to release this model to you.
Yeah, dude. I mean, this is kind of business, right? Yeah.
Well, it's definitely a possibility, but it looks like that wasn't what was holding them back.
You think it's that much of a jump? Man, I really want to try it now. Nick, have you tried 5.5? Yeah. Is it better or worse than 5.4?
They're all the same to me.
Yeah, he says they're all the same. There you go.
He's lost his AI psychosis. He's cured himself.
Yeah, there you go. Check it out, Stackers, if you're interested, if you're Cody. We're going to jump into the next one. This one is the... 12 graphs that explain the state of AI in 2026. So I thought this was a really interesting graph and an interesting post. But AI investment is skyrocketing, as many of y'all know. What does that impact look and how does it look like in charts? So we have here, let's see if I can move this closer here. Really? There you go. Number of notable AI models by select geographic areas. Got the United States, China, and Europe. Didn't we have this conversation last time? I was telling you that Europe is just failing.
I don't remember you saying that, but a lot of people say that.
So. Look at that. U.S. How's this shocked me? I didn't think the robotics was being led by China.
That makes sense. Coming? They have all the physical like manufacturing.
Yeah. And Japan's second. United States.
Very few regulations in the physical world relative to the United States. So it makes sense that they would be leading by a large margin.
The world AI compute capacity has grown 3.3x yearly since 2022.
Wow.
I think we've seen that. Training AI models can generate enormous carbon emissions. Okay, no one cares about that. LLMs are rapidly defeating new benchmarks. We could see that. Where was the other one? Yes, the gains in medicines. What does that mean, analog clock? LLMs still have trouble reading an analog clock. What does that mean?
It means you feed them like a picture of an analog watch, like the one you're wearing, and it can't tell the time.
Really?
Yeah, it only tells the time. The current state of the art is 50%.
What do you mean? So it can't look at this and know the time?
Yes.
How though? It's just arrows.
It's not trained on
arrows.
A data set that includes analog clocks.
What?
Yeah. These models only know what they're trained on. They're not.
Like, so I took a picture right now, sent it. It wouldn't know that this is.
Only 50% of the time it would be accurate.
Wow. Find that hard to believe. AI investment hit a new peak in 2025. I feel like that's normal. Software engineers are on a roll. Or all in on AI. I read on a roll. Yeah, that sounds about right. AI's overall impact on employment remains unclear. What do you think about this one? This is the one that you were talking about.
Yeah, we talked about around blocks layoffs. I still believe what I said then, which is I think there won't be much of a loss of people in the workforce as a result of AI. I expect more employment rather than less.
Yeah, and then it just keeps going more. But anyway, this is a fantastic read. By spectrum.less, i.e. spectrum. What website is this? Oh, wow.
They run a bunch of science journals.
Love it. We're going to jump into to my story first because Keon's is a Bitcoin one. This is the last AI one today. So this one is called Anthropic Dario Amodi? To meet with White House about Mythos. So this got released a week ago. He went to the White House and talked to cabinet.
Do you have, what did you say? Oh, you're listening.
So they're meeting with the White House. I don't know, man. I feel like a lot of this is just kind of like publicity, you know, just almost like, I don't know. It just feels all a little bit all over the place. But yeah, Trump did reply back because we got this here. He said, where is it at? It's up here. Oh, actually, it's on this one. It's this one right here. So this is the one. So actually, Trump did say here after they met with him. Yeah, this is what he said. He goes, we had some very good talks with them, and I think they're shaping up. They're shaping up, Keon. They're very smart, and I think they can be of great use. After the visit.
Dang.
What do you think?
Trump's still trying to mock him.
What do you think?
I think okay. I don't know. I think whether Anthropic wants them to use their models or not, they're probably going to use them. I probably have a hard time stopping them.
Do you think the Mythos thing is actually accurate? Do you think there's actually a cybersecurity threat?
We discussed it last time. I think it's safe to assume that there is, or it's safest to assume that there is a cybersecurity threat that these large labs.
So you say you'd rather err on the side of caution?
Yeah, these large labs are probably capable of building such models that are very good at.
What'd you say? Sell you shit. You said they want to sell you crap.
Okay, so you think it's fake?
Security companies always want to sell you shit. Remember Mandiant.
He says they all want to sell you stuff.
Yeah, he's saying this is like McAfee antivirus, but LLM version.
He said this is a new version of it. Yeah. Well, Mozilla thinks there's zero-day vulnerabilities that have that are out there, and they even said there's one that has been detected that's 27 years old, which, yeah. There is a Evan Pena. He's one of the founders of Armada, and he said a... now you can have 1,000 of me constantly coming at you if you have if you have Mythos. Imagine that. Don't you want 1,000 Evan Peñas, Keon?
Sure. Is he like a handsome man? Or
he might be.
Okay.
That's a swarm of Peñas.
He's handsome.
Do you think this is gonna actually lead to them actually partnering with the American government?
Again, I don't know if it matters or not. It seems like they are ideologically opposed to being used by governments in ways that they can't control. So I don't think that would change. You get like a sort of autistic nerd, like Modi, in charge of one of these orgs. I don't think he's ever going to change his mind unless like threatened in a physical way, or they threaten to take away the company, or you know introduce some kind of standoff. So I would guess.
I mean, I don't know if you saw this week, no. But the government, you know, got some shares into Spirit Airlines, you know.
They bought shares?
I feel like they bought shares, or we're going to buy shares to bail them out.
American hedge funds.
So
Liberty.
Maybe they just take over Anthropic.
That's what I would guess. That's like, I think the real risk to Anthropic is if they don't play ball at least a little bit, that at some point they're going to be like, there's going to be like some national security thing where the government's like, we're going to assume control over your company for national security or whatever.
Trump did say their selfishness is putting American lives at risk, our troops in danger, and our national security in jeopardy. There you go. Well, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting summer.
It's always an interesting summer.
Love to see it. We're going to jump into Keon's top story this week that he had, the true and accurate history of the $5 wrench. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, so Scoresby helps us figure out where the origin of the $5 wrench meme came from. I did not know where it came from. I assumed it was like a sort of an older thing, and I couldn't date it. But he goes back and he dates it and uncovers a bunch of the kind of like original sources of it. I guess the first Bitcoin usage, though, date back to 2011 on Bitcoin Talk from the Chevalier on a thread about portable Bitcoin security, and he shares it there. But that's the first Bitcoin usage you could find. But before then, it looks like the original origin of the $5 wrench is from an XKCD comic titled Security, which was released in February of 2009. And it's shown right here. You have someone's laptop and the drive is encrypted, and you have two options. You can build a multi-million-dollar cluster to crack the encryption, or you can just go to the person who has the encryption key and attack them with a $5 wrench and get the key from them. Much cheaper to use the $5 wrench is kind of the argument. I guess the $5 wrench was a... Like, why did he, then Scoresby pursues, like, why did he pick a $5 wrench? And is there, like, an earlier origin? What inspired him to use a $5 wrench? And I guess it comes from earlier cryptography mail lists where the $5 wrench is called a rubber hose. The rubber hose scenario is about encryption systems that give you plausible deniability. So kind of like a duress password on a hardware wallet, where you can provide a decryption key that supplies plain text given given ciphertext. And it's unclear to the person who is attacking you whether that is the correct representation of the ciphertext or not. So you can show multiple versions of the same ciphertext in plain text is what deniable encryption is. And it's typically, and that is called the rubber hose scenario. And Julian Assange is one of the authors of one of the original deniable encryption systems, which is under a system called rubber hose. And then if you go back even further, like, where is rubber hose first used in cryptography generally? It was on a cryptography mailing list that Marcus Renoum started. And the thread is titled Cryptography and the Law. And the person with the rubber hose doing the rubber hose attack is the government. So that is the origin of the $5 wrench attack, is cryptographers considering governments attacking them. And that is the origin of the $5
wrench attack. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of a 2001 Space Odyssey with the bone. I don't know if you ever saw the opening scene with the monkeys and the bone. And then they pick up the bone, and then they hit the other monkey, and they steal his food. That's what that reminds me of. Because it's basically like you could imagine, like, maybe in caveman times, you know, you had like somebody, I don't know, dude, like somebody trying to steal your food, and you hit them with a bone or something, and that's a $5 wrench, I guess, back then. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that's the original reminds me of, yeah. Original $5. Maybe it's if you want to go back even further, it's 2001: A Space Odyssey, where
because before maybe they just hid their food, right? That was a form of cryptography, hiding your food.
Yeah, they're way earlier physical attacks. It's kind of weird how these things get memed into existence. Where rubber hose was the device that people were attacking mm-hmm. for an arbitrary reason on an old mailing list, and then XKCDC for an arbitrary reason chooses a $5 wrench rather than a bat or even a gun. It just keeps going.
Yeah. Good post, Scoresby. We're going to jump into the meta. Yeah, the meta this week was from, it was this one, the quantum computing theorist. You mentioned this earlier when we were talking about the quantum stuff. What was this, Cam?
So we managed to get Scott Aronson on the pod, which is pretty freaking awesome.
Did he to the Lightning stuff or no?
No, we weren't able to get him, but Scoresby did help him in person. He went to UT to his office and helped him
Nice.
With anything he might need, because he was skeptical that he would be able to get on the site. He's like not very technical, ironically.
Yeah.
So he went and helped him get on for the AMA, and it happened in a very short time frame. So unfortunately, we couldn't really pump it up, and it did coincide with some of the conferences that are going on ahead of the Las Vegas conference, namely Nifty's Hoover Dam Bitcoin +++ conference. Anyway, Scott Aronson came on. He runs one of probably the widest known quantum computing blogs on the internet. And he works at UT after being an associate professor, I think, at MIT for a few years. And he's very interested in educating normal people about quantum computing, or people who are interested in it. Does a lot of work in that regard, and was very happy to have him on. And we got to ask him a bunch of normal questions that all of us have about the stuff going on. Because there's mostly panic that you see, and for most people, you know, spurred on by other people who are maybe have weird incentives, or maybe have incapable of understanding this stuff because they're not technical, but feel like they have the biggest platform, so they want to say all kinds of things about quantum computing. And you have a person who's actually familiar with the research and understands it all here answering questions. So I thought it was pretty awesome.
It was fascinating. It just kind of goes to show, just let the computer scientists go at it, right? Or I guess in this case, quantum scientist. Interesting stuff. Was there any questions that stuck out?
I thought they were all really good. I had a lot of, I've read through them a few times now. I hadn't really spent much time myself really diving into any of this stuff. Let's see if I can find the thread. I thought they were really good. There was a question in here about intuition. The quantum speedups come from, because it kind of breaks down most of what you learn in theoretical computer science about the like runtime complexity of things. And so it's like, where is like, does the is the universe is like is the universe helping these quantum computers solve problems faster than we thought were possible somehow? And I guess it's harnessing some very particular part of the way of nature and the way these quantum computers are. It's not like free energy or like perpetual motion or something silly like that. It's actually something much more practical. He describes, it's pretty technical, but it's things like you have these qubits who are, or these components that are producing wave-like patterns that you can get to kind of choreograph into canceling out or amplifying each other and solving through repeated repetition a problem to eventually allow you to read out the right answer quite fast.
Yeah, it sounds over my head. I'm not even going to bother.
Yeah, well, before you said let the computer scientists do what they do, yeah. I don't necessarily like that attitude coming from non-technical people, because it's not, I want, they have a role to play too, because if computer scientists are busy on the code part, they don't have time to communicate.
Yeah, well, they're the people that get the people together. I mean, they're the ones that do all the human stuff.
Yeah, but I think they need to be elevating the right people and helping people figure out who the frauds are. That is the role of, and so they, to some extent, the technical people and the non-technical people need to be communicating quite a lot and not just saying like, you do you, I'm not gonna bother with you, and vice versa.
Yeah, no, I hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good one. Good stuff. Hopefully we see more of these. Yeah, I feel like the last two ones have been like really good. Two AMAs, or maybe it was two or three AMAs.
Earlier this week we did a normie AMA where Scoresby somehow got a normal person who isn't familiar with
Bitcoin. That was a good one.
Yeah.
I feel like the last three AMAs have been really good, so hopefully they keep heading in that direction.
Yeah.
We're going to go into Blood Poets zine this week. It's called SNZ number 55 is here in Queer Not JK. Well, so I don't know what that means.
I don't know if that's the title of it or... I'm not really sure.
But it has a really cool Stacker News C-3PO hat in the back. That looks cool. You see that one? It's like he's lighting him a cigarette.
I did see that one.
I wonder if that's made with AI.
If it what?
I wonder if it's made with AI, this image.
From my understanding, Scoresby will prompt an AI. He'll take an image that he likes and prompt the AI to put a hat on it, and then he'll further edit it by hand.
Mm. Looks really cool. But yeah, check out the zine this week. We have, there's the web version. There's a print version. If you want the print version, you got to pay for it.
And we mail it to you.
And then they mail it to you with a free sticker. Yeah, this is a little sneak peek of it. Check it out. Oh, wow. She covered the auction stuff too as well. That's cool. Oh, wow. This looks like it was taken from that album by Elliot Smith. Interesting. Then there's, check out all this stuff here. There's more stuff there. She even covers the Peter Todd stuff. Wow, she even embedded video in there. A photo of video. That's cool. Ben Carman's is one there. Maybe you get a zine, and then you get, when you see Ben Carman at the conference, you can get him to sign it. There you go.
Oh.
There you go. How about that?
Not a bad idea.
We got the Monday top meme was from Hasher Snacker. He said, bro, if you can just hustle more, you can be bound by these gold chains instead.
Yeah, who doesn't want to look fly in prison?
Oh, were they in prison? Oh, I see it now.
They're chained to a wall.
That one. Anyways, check it out. The zine number 55 is here. We're going to jump into the Top Cowboys. You want to pull up on yours, Keon? Top Cowboys?
I guess.
We also have a comment from Undisciplined. He said that he'll take over the Top Cowboys segment if we don't want it anymore.
Oh, so, what does that mean?
That means he wants to take it to he wants to do the Top Cowboys segment in him and
On the Ruby's podcast. Sports Pod.
I mean, we could pass the baton.
I guess so.
Cowboys every week. Getting on up. You got to put on the hat.
Oh, that's
or it's
right.
Not official. I forgot. Yeah. Discipline. If we let you do it, we would have to send you one of these hats, and then we would need proof that you were wearing the hat. That's how that would work.
Oh yeah, it's definitely a pair, a couple, a deal.
So we have the Top Cowboys, Keon. We got Coop at the top, watching Boo, Gray Ruby. Scroll down a little bit because this was taking shape last week when I was. Okay, so where is Solomon Satoshi here? So keep going down. He was at 18 last week. Oh, he dropped off. Oh, wow. He did drop off. Oh, wow. So, yeah, he started all over. He was making his way up there. Couldn't do it. Couldn't maintain the hat.
It's a very hard thing to do. Takes real resilience and perseverance and strong character. A Cowboys character, really.
Wait, you're going to keep going?
No, I don't really have much else. I mean, you know Cowboys. They're tough and stuff. That's why you got a cowboy hat.
Yeah. Anybody else? Oh yeah, Peter Todd's making his way up. Real Bitcoin doggy.
South Korea Bitcoin. That's right. You like to go all the way through. Oh, there's Solomon. He's back.
Oh, he's back. So he just dropped his.
He dropped
hat.
It. For it's one close. Day. He has 2 days there.
Gotta start all over.
There's Sound Sanoa.
Now,
classic.
Who's
now.
The last one? Who's the last lucky stacker that gets zapped by the stackers for a million sats? Oh, it is SN25. Probably a bot.
5T. I think
is that a bot?
No, they wrote like something that was like Superstore. You remember Superstore?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they made a Noster thing like Superstore where kind of all the details are that you need to load a web, like a web store or a community or other things are encoded in the URL. Wow. And you don't actually have to run servers because fair using a bunch of Noster relays.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's what they did. And they got a hat, I guess. Nice. Uncle Jim up there, too, at the bottom.
Nice. Let's jump into the comments now and talk about those. So the first comment was from Undisciplined. He said, Javon's paradox doesn't hold for all goods. The point is that there are goods for which demand is such that it holds.
Oh.
Wait, so say that slower. Let's see. The point is that there are goods for which demand is such that it holds. Oh, he means like water and canned goods, he means. Or no, does he mean something else?
Yeah, I think there are some things have, well, I guess.
Have value.
Well, remember, Javon's paradox is that when something gets more efficient to use, we use it more. And I guess he's saying that demand for some goods does not continue to be high. And we can only use it so much, I think is what he's saying. So that's because I think we were discussing the difference between gold, or is it diamonds and water? Diamonds and water are the typical examples there.
Yeah, then the other thing he said was, what we mentioned earlier, if you don't want the cowboy segment anymore, I know a higher... Oh, I forgot he said this. I know a higher-ranked podcast that would be happy to take it.
Those sports guys know how to talk trash, dude.
These Canadians, right? Like, are they both from Canada, or is just Grey Ruby from Canada?
I think it's undisclosed where Undisciplined is.
Okay.
But we know Grey Ruby is
Canadian. I'm going to go ahead and call him a Canadian unless he proves me otherwise. But I mean,
He behaves like a Canadian. How about that for shit talking? Huh?
Higher ranked. Are they higher ranked, really? I guess they are. I mean, hey, I mean, there's a lot of palettes, me and Keon are just a different taste, you know? Anyways, that's all we got for this week on Stacker News Live. Keon, what are you doing this week?
I don't think I have any plans to do anything except all the stuff that I normally do. I might eat a sandwich. I've been trying to catch up on movies.
Really?
Because I haven't watched a movie in like, feels like quite a while, like several years. Not several years, but nearly a year. Like last week, I watched the 28 Years Later.
Oh, which one? The
both
the
of them. I watched. Oh, both
you watched
of them.
Both of them?
Yeah,
they're wait, a little. The one back. Hey, wait, has the other one came out already?
It did. Yeah.
Oh wow, I need to watch that.
Yeah.
I only saw the first. Did you like the first one or no?
They're both good. They felt like more like TV episodes than they did.
Oh, because you saw them back to back, probably.
Yeah, but
don't ruin the second one. I haven't seen the second.
Neither
one.
Felt like a full, like a really complete movie.
The first one did.
It didn't for me. Okay. I was kind of not super into it. I mean, I did enjoy it, but kind of like a Walking Dead episode.
Mm.
And then I watched Begonia.
You saw that? What did you think about that?
I thought that was fun. I mean, it was a little predictable, but it was fun.
Wait, did you know she was an alien?
Yeah.
Oh, you knew.
Yeah, I knew they had to do something to make it worth. But
that kid that was the kid that was his cousin. He was good, right?
Oh, he did a great job. I don't know what he's like.
Did you know
normally.
He was really like that?
Normally? Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
I mean, then he's not acting.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I thought that was such a great. That's one of my favorite movie last year.
It was a very good movie.
Did you like the way it ended?
What happened? Oh yeah, I thought it
had your kind of ending.
It did have a weird kind of ending. I wish I would have seen more of that world.
Oh, maybe there'll be a part two. It's apparently that was like based on like a Japanese movie or something like that.
Oh, that would make sense. It's very, very, it felt very Asian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but.
No, it's cool. It was cool.
It was a very cool movie. I watched Predator, which was probably my favorite out of the collection of movies that I watched.
Yeah, that's a good solid movie.
Catching up. What are you doing this weekend?
Flying to Vegas for TabConf and a couple other things. And then, just doing that. And then get to be here tomorrow and do some work before we leave. And then jumping on a plane. I'm looking forward to eating some lobster when I get to Vegas, though.
Is that what you do in Vegas?
I do want to hit a buffet and like that has lobster.
Do you have the buffet picked out?
No, I don't. I'll just wing it.
Is there anything else you want to do in Vegas?
Pretty much that's it. Just go to a buffet that has lobster.
What about your Alex?
And like dip a thing in there and go like that.
What about your Alex Honnold fandom?
Oh, yeah. So I probably won't have time to do that.
Oh, man.
Man, but I did want to go check out some of the hikes and stuff. I did want to do that. Maybe if I find like somebody with a ride who's down to do it.
You're not renting a car?
I don't think so. I mean, I could, but I don't think we're going to need it.
Where are you staying?
I don't know.
You don't know yet?
I don't know.
Someone else is going to decide
somebody,
for you?
Somebody else is picking it, so we'll see when I get there. Yeah, but I'll be around in Las Vegas, so if you see me at Las Vegas, say what's up. I'll probably be speaking or talking or something there. And then also I'll be around.
TabConf, right?
I'll be at TabConf.
Are you speaking at TabConf?
No. What do I have? I'm not a developer.
Huh?
I'm not a developer.
Yeah, but you could speak about community. I don't know. You're good at something, aren't you?
No, I'm terrible at everything.
Oh, come on.
Anyways, Stackers, have yourself a great weekend. Let me see. How do I end this here? Oh, yeah, right here. All right, Keon.
Zap.